overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change, to create a brand new life. I am.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center of Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
Sound of the bell take you into the silence, if you will. The beautiful thing about silence is that it's always there. And we tend to have a mind that can think and compartmentalize, analyze, awfulize, but when for a holy instant a bell is rung and we witness the diminishment of the sound of the bell, we recognize that there is a holy silence that emerges. Thich Nhat Hanh so beautifully says, "Be still and heal." And so we're starting this Sunday celebration with an invitation to just be still. When I go on spiritual retreat and go through walks in nature, I find myself chanting sometimes, "Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know." And then I rest in the stillness. And when you get intimate with stillness, you realize that there is freedom. Freedom from what Spiro Agnew called the nattering nabobs of negativity. The thought patterns that tried to convince you to follow them. And I find myself sometimes when they arise, I say, "Thank you for sharing." And then I go into a conscious breath. And in that conscious breath, I arrive and I am home in the breath of the one that knows no other. The breath within the breath. I was listening to Richard Rohr last night, and he was talking about the name of God. The name of God is Yahweh. And he says in one of the commandments, "Thou shalt not use the Lord thy God's name in vain." And he says, we've taken that out of context. He says, what the name of God is, Yah. And without using your lips, without using your tongue, without using your jaw, the simple exhalation, Yah, with every breath, we are saying the name of God. And so you don't use that name in vain, but you are living that vein. When you are born, the name of God is on your breath. And when you leave this mortal coil, the name of God is on your breath. And so it takes you into a whole different way of seeing life. All is the breath of God saying her name in the silence. And we witness it. So this Sunday, I'm exploring the idea, what if? What if, from the time we were a small child, we were told that this divine presence lived within us and all around us? And even as a small child, you could touch your heart and feel the presence of love, feel the presence of peace, feel the possibility and potential of the universe awakening within. And then when life would seem chaotic and confusing, all we'd have to do is touch our heart, turn within, and discover that that presence, that peace, that love is still there. And just consciously breathe. Yeah. Yeah. And we align ourselves with this presence. What if it is that simple? What if there's nothing to acquire? There's no dream to be fulfilled? That the dream is really taking us to a place within ourselves that wants to come alive. And so as Howard Thurman would say, don't try to solve all the world's problems. Find rather what brings you alive and follow that. And then we begin to listen to the longing of the soul to express, to be revealed. And we are in a fertile place of discovery. Mark Nepo says, why pursue answers when the question is so delightful? So instead of seeking answers or conclusions, we stay in that fertile place of the question. How would life reveal herself endlessly anew within me right now? And then listen. Listen with your heart. Notice how the silence is pregnant with possibility. And when we meet in the silence, we don't seek answers or conclusions. We don't seek somebody's advice, but rather we open to that which needs no advice. That presence that's always there embracing us. Richard Rohr referenced God as three qualities. He says God is the good, the true, and the beautiful. And so in the goodness of God, God loves all creation. It doesn't love us if we're perfect and if we do everything right. No, it loves us in our flawed sense. It loves us in our suffering and our pain, in our chaos and confusion. God is the good, and we begin to witness the good in our lives and see it as the presence revealing herself. God is the true. Could we seek the truth that is way beyond the facts of life? The truth that there is only one here. The truth that arises from within. That when it arises, it's like a light bulb goes off. It awakens. God is the good, God is the true, and God is the beautiful. The beautiful, we look outside and we see the trees changing color. We see this majesty of beauty all around us, and we realize we only see the beauty of creation because beauty has awoken within us. And we find that beautiful presence that's right there at the core of our being. It's as if the kingdom of heaven is waking up within us. A kingdom that is so beautiful that it asks us to remember. In the Sufi tradition, they say all is remembering and forgetting. We forget who we are, and then we remember. It says in the Quran, when you remember him, he remembers you. When you remember the good, the God, the true and the beautiful, the good, the God, the true and the beautiful, awaken. within the core of your being, and you are aligned yet again in the sacred moment, the sacrament of now, the eternal now, in the one life flowering within. Emerson says, what lies behind us and what lies before us are small compared to what lies within us. And so instead of seeking the good sometime in the future or remembering a past time when we felt connected, we turn within to the breath, within the breath, and we touch that eternal spaciousness of now. And we smile. What if all we're here to do is go home and smile? It is so sweet and so simple and so profound all at the same time. And so with playfulness, with curiosity, and with a willingness and the earnestness of heart, I invite you to open your eyes, to be here now, to experience the sacredness of belonging. And this is my friend, the penguin. Barbara Rollins gave him to me. One Sunday morning, he showed up sitting on my chair. And the significance of this animal is he's my spirit animal. It was maybe 40 years ago, I took a shamanic workshop with a man named Michael Harner. And I'm lying on the floor and they're beating the drums. And they're saying, invite your spirit animal to come to you. And I'm guessing a lion, maybe, a giraffe, an antelope, something beautiful and graceful. And out of the clear blue comes waddling a penguin. And we're supposed to ask your spirit animal any questions that you might have that have been troubling you. And I remember asking this penguin, I said, how are we going to create peace on Earth? And the penguin showed me other penguins sitting together and lifting his little thing and sitting on an egg. We're all taking care of the egg. We're all giving birth to some kind of life that we're all tending. And then I said, how are we ever going to learn to get along? I said to the penguin. And the next thing I know, he's sliding down on his belly and he's going into the water and he's playing and he says, have fun. And there's no such thing as organized pet play, as Tia reminds me. Play by its very nature is not organized. It's creative and spontaneous. And so I thought, well, this is kind of silly. And then when we came out of the shamanic journey, they said, to honor your spirit animal, we're going to play the drums and you're going to dance as your animal. So being the dancer that I was, I all of a sudden moved into the body of a penguin and I was waddling around the room and I still move like a penguin in this beautiful thing called life. So the reason I share that with you is, what if we could open to life's experiences? And when something is crazy, is someone beating on a drum asks you to go within. And, you know, I thought that I was conjuring up the penguin, but I wasn't. That's the last thing I would have imagined. He just showed up. I didn't conjure up any of y'all out here. You just showed up in my dream. Maybe you're the penguin tribe that I've been looking for. I don't know. What if we have no control? What if we were lied to when we grew up? What if we're not supposed to be perfect, Rupe, you and me? What if we're supposed to be flawed? Well, God, then everything seems like it's turning the tables on the temple, turning the whatever. I was listening to Richard Rohr yesterday, as I shared with you, and he did a beautiful interview with Father Thomas Keating. And he was speaking adamantly, and I should share this with you, Mary, because he said, we in the church, and Sylvia knows what it's all about. She went to a Seventh-day Adventist yesterday. He says, we have to, in Christianity, get beyond the idea of atonement. And I'm listening attentively, atonement, I'm thinking, because you can translate that into at-one-ment. No, but the atonement that the church teaches is that we were born in sin, and through the blood of Jesus and through his supplication and asking God to forgive humanity, then God loved humanity. And he says we've got to get past that fakakta idea of atonement. He says because God loves its creation in all its flawed, in all its imperfectness. He says, God does not have a moral judgment, and when you're righteous and good and do everything right, then God will love you. He says, no, that's not the God of the universe. And so here is this Franciscan monk sitting with a Benedictine monk, turning the tables in the temple, saying we've got to get past organized religion and we've got to find a mystical sense of oneness. And so Richard Rohr then went into this reflection on the original name of God. And it was back into Latin words, and I don't know the Latin word, but the first, there are two qualities that he gave to the original version of God. not the old man in the sky. He says, God is the dance of life everywhere revealing itself. Now, being the dancer, I love that idea. This dance of creation is the universe. So it's everywhere around you. Now just play with that. And then the second word was from the Greeks, persona, which means mask. And he says, in the Greek theater, they would wear a mask over the face, and then the voice would speak through the mask. And because they didn't have microphones like I have, they would have a megaphone in the mask, and spirit would speak through the persona, out of which we got the word person. So he says, the second quality of the universe is that it speaks through us. And that we are the mask through which spirit makes itself known, through which it expresses. Then he goes on to say the soul wants to express the truth, whereas the ego wants to impress the world. And he says, you know when you're in your ego because you want to impress them, you want validation and you want approval, but the soul doesn't care for that. The soul needs to express its uniqueness. And sometimes it comes out in a crazy, free-spirited sort of way. So could we, he says, explore this dance of the dream and then waking up to the presence of this creative something within us. Carl Jung says, when we're focused outward, we're focused on the dream. But when we're focused inward, we awaken this creative something, this essence of our being that longs to be revealed. Now he said, if, on the other hand, you can see the dream, whatever that dream was, as awakening that something that wants to come alive in you, well, then the outer dream has the potential to awaken you to an inner dream. And then he talks about this love affair with the universe and this idea that God is love. And so often we take the love and we project it onto form. You know, beautiful Herman, there's the form of love. And he says, but the idea is, what if that form were the universe itself and you fell in love with the universe? And that the purpose of the object is to awaken the love that is subjective. It's the same love. Then it has nothing to do with the object. And you can have as many objects, as many dogs and cats and flowers, but they're really awakening the same love, the one love, which is the love of the universe. In the Sufi tradition, they call this the lover and the beloved. And of course, you and I would be the lover and the beloved would be God. And so there's a famous Sufi story. Now, stories aren't meant to be taken literally. They're pointing to a dynamic process. So in the Sufi story, the lover is longing for his beloved. And he goes and knocks on the bedchamber of the beloved and says, beloved, beloved, it is me, David. Let me in. And the beloved says, no, no, you're not ready, David. So then David comes back in his perfectionism, knocks again. Beloved, beloved, I've taken all these classes. I'm spiritual now. I'm even a minister. I'm a doctor, reverend doctor. Beloved, let me in. No, no, you're not ready yet. So finally, the lover gets exhausted. And he goes to the door of the beloved and he knocks on the door. And the beloved said, who is there? And the lover said, only you. There's only you. There is no me. It's all been you, always been you. And then the door opens and he says, now you're ready. So what if we're here to know our divinity? We're here to awaken to this. And what I'm speaking about is not going back to sleep. And we go to sleep when we get caught up in me, in my story, in the addiction of me, this impermanent life form that is here for a brief time. But when this something, this mysterious something, and it is a mystery, you know, science knows that. Richard Rohr says, I go to these scientific meetings and they're so connected to the mystery of this universal something, whereas theologians get trapped in the structure of hierarchy of thinking. And so, glasses are on top of your head. When you look for them, that's usually where they are. I wanted to read you a little poem by Samuel Coleridge in 1770s. This is his little poem called What Then? And he says, what if you slept? And what if in your sleep, you dreamed? And what if in your dream, you went to heaven? And there you plucked a strange and beautiful flower? And what if when you awoke from your dream, you had the flower in your heart? Ah, what then? Now that's pointing to a dynamic process. What if we went within ourselves? And, you know, Jesus said his only message was the kingdom. Seek ye first the kingdom of heaven. Now, this is a state of consciousness that's within us and it's all around us. It's a consciousness of oneness. It's a consciousness of interbeing, how we're all so deeply connected. Could we see God in the smallest of things? Then it's God seeing herself mirrored in the world. So what if, when we do our spiritual practice, when we come here, when we chant, when we pray, we discover this mysterious something within us from the kingdom of heaven within, and then his last question is, what then? How then are you going to be in the world? Are you going to still carry your backpack of your stuff and identify with it? Yeah, we all have a backpack filled with stuff. But after a while, you can just put the backpack down. It's still over there. My friend Helen used to say, people walk around with their story, and they say, you want to hear my story? Oh, it's a really good story. There's a lot of twists and turns. There's a lot of drama in it. And Helen would say, why don't you give me your story, and I'll put it down over here, and we can pick it up later if you want. Well, I don't want to put my story down. You know, I spent a whole lifetime identifying with this story. And in that playful sort of creative way, we get to just have a glimpse of what life would be like without me in the narrative. What if it's that simple? You know, we're coming up to the holidays and there's families getting together. And I've been on the phone with my two sisters. The one sister's having a breakdown in Idaho, so the one in Oregon is going to drive over and pick her up. And I think she's going to move to Oregon. One is in the most liberal state in the country, and the other's in the most conservative state. So I think it'll be an interesting thing how these two souls come together in this journey. And of course, the family guilt. Anybody been raised with guilt? I've been told that I need to come out because, and so I have a little bit of guilt, my backpack of guilt. I'll put it back on, or not. I can put the guilt down. And you know, I studied with a therapist once, and I said, I'm too poor to go to a therapist. And she says, well, what's your problem? I said, I was just raised with guilt. I have so much guilt. And she says, I'll tell you the skinny on guilt. It'll save you a fortune. So I perked up. And she says, guilt is like the Thanksgiving Day platter. And they say, want some guilt? And you say, no, thank you. This is for you, Finn. Want some guilt? No, thank you. And you know, I've been saying no, thank you for my whole life now. When the guilt platter comes in, you need to fix your sister. You need to take care of this. No, thank you. She's not a problem that needs to be fixed. She is a beautiful, unfolding expression of life, and she's created her own karma. And karma's cause and effect. And so when we honor everybody's karma, we honor their journey, well, then sometimes you get to realize maybe each one of us needs to go through the journey that we go through until we don't need it anymore. I once was lost, but now I'm found. I once was blind, but now I see. Amazing grace. So in Richard Rohr, he was talking about the symbol of the cross. Now, he says, the symbol of the cross isn't the object upon which Jesus died. He said, I consider it a holding pattern. And what the cross says, in a metaphor, he says, it shows you the suffering of the world, and that Jesus, being the embodiment of God, embraced the suffering of the world. He didn't push it away. So when suffering arises, and it's going to arise in this crazy world we live in, could we be the holding space that will just hold the suffering? My beloved Adam was saying his little dog had a stroke, and they lay on the floor and they just held the dog whose body was rigid. And after a while, the dog just released and found homeostasis, balance again. So we're all going to have suffering. And so when that suffering arises, could we be that holding space for one another? And then suffering isn't bad. Suffering is a birth canal, if you will. And I thought what was so interesting with Father Keating and Richard Rohr, they said our job is to midwife this new consciousness on the planet. And if we don't awaken the consciousness of oneness, non-dual perception, or the contemplative mind looks at everything and sees it as sacred. Everything is an aspect of the one. And then Mary Oliver over here, she'll look at the birds in the sky and see the light shining on their leaves and saying, I am fully present in this moment to witness the beauty, the good, and the true outside me. And when I witness it outside me, it's because it's awakened within me. Is it that simple? Yeah, it's that simple. When this divine presence awakens within you, it sees itself everywhere revealed. And then there is no other. There is only the one. Now, what if that rose within us? How would we relate to the world? I think we would have more compassion for the suffering, wouldn't we? We would have more empathy for those who are forgetful and in the dark and ignorant of truth. Those who believe that there's a rigid, perfect way to get to heaven, Roop, but there is no perfect way to get to heaven. And then there's a line in the scripture that says, could my perfection adore my own imperfection? Wow, then the flaws are sacred. I was sharing with the revealing service that Richard Rohr talks about the Navajo Indians in the Southwest and how they always weave a flaw into their tapestries. They say it's through the flaw that the soul escapes. So if you buy one of their rugs, one of their serapes, you're going to see a flaw in there. And that's not a mistake in the pattern. It's intentional, because we all have a divine flaw so that our soul can emerge. So could we be playful with that and say, what is the flaw that wants to escape through this imprisoned being? Yeah. So it was Terry, my daughter, who said she was listening to Richard Rohr, and he says, why mess up the answer for a good question? Why seek an answer to life's scenario? And it's so much better to live in a question. So, you know, I thought that those little bracelets, WWJD, what would Jesus do? What would love do in your life? What would a free spirit do? Is your life a cage, or is your life a perch upon which you soar and explore? You know, what if you could inquire into the life that you've been given? We're doing this Richard Rohr class, and he talks about growing up and waking up. So what would your life look like if you grew up? To me, when you grow up, you take responsibility. You take responsibility for your thinking. You take responsibility for how you are in relationships. And you know, all of life is relationship. You're not going to escape it. There's the relationship with self. Do you have a good relationship with yourself? Can you love yourself just the way you are? When I studied with Louise Hay in the middle of the AIDS crisis, she would sing a chant because so many people loathe themselves. And the chant was, I love myself the way I am. There's nothing I need to change. I'll always be the perfect me. There's nothing to rearrange. I'm beautiful. I'm capable of being the best me I can. And I love myself just the way I am. Now, the question is, can we have a relationship with this self and love that self just the way it is? Is that you, Josh? There's a Netflix series out that reminded me so much of you. I binged on it. It's a movie. It's called Tick, Tick, Boom. And it's the story of a young writer in New York City in the middle of the AIDS crisis who was making peace with his life growing up. And he died a young life. He died at 30 of an aneurysm, but he lived such an authentic life. And his whole message was, if we don't live the life that we've been given, what life are we living? And it had all the pathos, it had all the struggling, it had all the suffering, and yet it had the breakthrough moments, one breakthrough moment after another. And of course, I'm sitting here with tears coming down my face saying, if you don't live this life, it was the poet Kabir that said, we've been given this life on this earth, and if we live it now, he says, the life that you live now is the same life that you're going to live when you shuffle off your mortal coil. He says, but if you don't discover that creative, passionate life while you're here, you're not going to find it when you die. He says, let those who have ears to hear, hear. So we get to find heaven right here on earth. We get to find the imprisoned beauty of the divine light and the creative spark right here, right now, on planet Earth, as we're doing stand-up comedy. And you know what I love about anything creative? The first thing you need to learn, and I come to my spirituality through the creative arts, the first thing is you're not the doer. You're the instrument through which this creative something flows. And when you get into that flow of this creative something, the most important thing is have no attachment to the outcome. So whatever comes out is what comes out. And sometimes you'll say that was a big mistake, but maybe the mistake was the way that the universe was being creative and authentic. It was 1976. It was the bicentennial. I'm in graduate school in dance. I'm 25 years old, and they picked me to play Yankee Doodle Dandy. And we're doing this big bicentennial performance at the University of San Jose. And my job was to wear a white tuxedo and cane and a top hat. And I had a whole stage filled with dancers. And I'm here to run from the back of the theater all the way down the aisle when a disco version, Yankee Doodle, keep it up, keep it up, keep it up. Yankee Doodle, keep it up, keep it up. And I'm running down there. And when I get to the stage, all of a sudden, I'm a Yankee Doodle dandy, da 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 da. So I run down the stage. I come up to the stage, and I totally forgot the choreography. And I went, holy cow. On the bicentennial, the audience is packed, the dancers are behind me, and then the voice said, you're Yankee Doodle, you can do whatever you want. So I started doing my Jimmy Cagney moves around the stage, and the choreographer said, you didn't do the choreography. I said, I know, I forgot it, but something different came out. Was it a flaw? It was perfect because spirit created it. So what if those little moments come through life, not so that we beat ourselves up for not being perfect, so that we say, okay, could I step into this something called life? Now, when I became a religious science minister and I would speak in California, they would shake their heads and they'd say, we don't know what we're really going to do with you. You're so different. I remember I'm standing on a stage with 1,000 people up there, and I says, the first thing this organization needs to do is drop the dime. Now, the metaphor of drop the dime is when you're a dancer, you're told to stand, and you squeeze between your buttocks a dime to give you the perfect turnout as a dancer. And then I plié'd and did a deep plié, and someone dropped a quarter by the microphone. Ding! And I said, so this organization needs to drop the dime. Well, now, they don't want to hear that, because that dime has been installed there by the powers that be. But if you have the chutzpah and the creative something, you know, it's what we need in the world, are authentic people, people who are not afraid to be who they are. So yeah, growing up and waking up. And the thing about waking up, and you've heard me say this before, it comes in stages. First, there's this something that awakens within you. You can call it the creative spark. You can call it the mystery of something. It can be curiosity. You know, you begin to listen to it. Root knows what it's all about. There's this something that's longing to be heard within you. And it's not you. It's something greater than you. It's the mystery of this love that's, and it's imaginative. And it's so beyond your local life. And then so there's this waking up, and then there's this waking in. And the waking in is where we get stuck, so many of us. That's where the unconscious is trying to become conscious. That's those patterns that we've been raised with, that I have to be a perfect so-and-so. I was raised with that perfection, the same as you, Roop. And if you're not perfect, you weren't enough. Well, that was a lie. So when you wake within, you take all those patterns that are coming up to be seen, and you don't try to get rid of them. You don't try to release them. You get curious about them. And then you find out that there's a vulnerable part of you. And you want to get rid of the vulnerable part because we're not comfortable being vulnerable. But as Richard Rohr said in our class this week, your powerfulness comes through your vulnerability. So then you begin to see vulnerability different. You know, when I'm vulnerable with Michael, then I get nurtured by Michael. So what if vulnerability takes me into intimacy? And then it's not a bad thing. I love it when Josh the other day was talking about the spider outside his door that he would normally just get rid of, but then he started having a relationship to it when he walked in and out. And when the spider disappeared, where did you go? Where did you go? And there's kind of a vulnerable, intimate kind of experience with that. You know, and then nature becomes not something that's objective, that's outside of you, but actually becomes a part of what you are. Here at the center, every year there's a drainage pipe over by the side of the building by the dumpsters. And at the top of that drainage pipe, every year, came a solitary mourning dove. And every Christmas, she'd make her nest in that drainage pipe all by herself. And she's waiting out the Christmas. And every day, Josh, I'd come to the center and I'd go to the bird. She was still there. And I'd say good morning to her. And she was here all Christmas. She came back year after year, all by herself. Now, was that a tragic, lonely mourning dove? Or was it our mourning dove that came here to her home to remind us that she's taking care of the building when I'm not here? So I'm having a relationship with the bird. And then one day the bird wasn't there. And I started to have my, oh, where did you go? What did you? And I said, no. You know, people come into your life to go out of your life, and they're here to serve the sense of we're connected to one another. I shared with you last week that my beloved husband was cleaning out the pond, and he found a snake all tangled in the web. And he spent the whole afternoon saving the snake's life. And it was not a man who was afraid of a snake. It became, all of a sudden, someone who was tending his own self. He said, I was convinced that whatever happened to the snake happens to me. And so when the snake finally did escape, even though he tried to cut it out, and he cut the snake, I said, do snakes bleed when they're cut? And he says, no, they didn't have blood. It was the strangest thing, David. But he said, he's free. And I thought, what an intimate, sweet moment to have with something you could consider lesser than, but it really isn't lesser than. So what if we're here to access this greater something that wants to be known by means of us? And what it requires is that we're attentive, that we pay attention, and that we behold. There's a beautiful song, Gary Lynn Floyd, called Behold, the Kingdom of God is Within You. It's not a place you get into. Somewhere far away. It's basically, behold, this thing is within you, and it wants to awaken within you. But your job is to behold it. So the Bible kind of, in a strange sort of way, gives us these pointers. It says, be still. And when you're still, you know. It says, behold. And when you behold it, you begin to see it everywhere. I was sharing with beloved Nancy, aka Mary Oliver, that when I hear her speak, it's as if I'm hearing Mary Oliver speak. Mary Oliver talks about standing outside and observing the birds in the fall and how the light will hit their wings. And if my attention can go with them, I'm lost in the good, the beauty, and the true. They're showing me the kingdom that's outside, that's spread out upon the earth, but when it has to awaken first within me in order to see it. So her whole message throughout her poetry, she'll say, so tell me, what do you plan to do with your one wild and beautiful life? Now hang out in that question. So tell me, what do you plan to do with your one wild and beautiful life? You've been given this life. And this life is not just about the skin encapsulated ego. It's spirit awakening to its potential and possibility, to the mystery, to the great love affair. And then what if you knew that this power so loved you that it wants to delight in itself by means of you? Now play with that one. So then what brings you to this aliveness? You know, for me as a young person, it was the freedom of dance. But it wasn't dance that was controlled and choreographed. It was more a dance that was discovered and allowed to flow through me. And so maybe the dance of the universe is experiencing itself as David. Not the controlled perfectionist dance of a Baryshnikov, but more of the Martha Graham alive on the floor, feeling it through your body and revealing whatever that was arising. Tick, tick, boom. You know, then life can have her way with you. So I'm going to close with a little practice of Richard Rohr in this lovely little class we're teaching. And it's a practice called beholding. And you know, with all the beauty that's all around us right now, with Thanksgiving on the horizon, with the trees, the ginkgos are bright yellow, the red maples are bright red, some of the leaves are falling. It's almost like you're being baptized by the trees. If you stand under my sugar maple, all these golden leaves are falling down on your head. And then you rake them into the big compost heap, and then you fall over in the leaves, and you feel like you're drowning in a pile of leaves. And there's something sweet about that intimacy, you know? So I'm going to ask my brother Raul to ring the bell. May the sound of the bell reverberate throughout the universe, taking us to that still point of remembrance. And know that all of life is our spiritual practice. It's how we are in the moment. And so I'm going to give you a contemplative's way to practice in a very loving way. He says, once you decide to behold, you are present to what is. And then every moment becomes a sacrament. Every moment is sacred. Without the crutch of your preferences or the false ledger of judging things, some as important or some as not important, you've moved out of that way of thinking. Then nothing needs to bother you, and nothing is truly insignificant. And you take a conscious inhalation. Nothing bothers you, and nothing is insignificant. A much broader, much deeper, and much wider field of perception opens up from within. It's becoming an alternative way of knowing and enjoying. And then the soul sees the soul everywhere it looks. He says, God is a presence whose center is everywhere and whose circumference is nowhere. And so then the awakened soul within sees the soul without. It is what the psalmist says, deep calling unto deep always responds. And so from the deep within us, we see the deep in a snake or a spider or a tree. Center knows center. And this is called love. And so let's breathe into that love right now, the love of the universe, and feel it. He says, beholding happens when you stop trying to hold anything and you allow yourself to be held by the other. Beholding happens when you stop trying to behold other things and you start allowing yourself to be held, in the hands of grace, to be embraced. I pass the teddy bear Bert around in our revealing service so that Bert can hold everyone as they talk about their feelings, knowing that they are held in love's arms. He says, look at a tree, for example. Until you see it in its absolute truth, in its goodness, in its truth, and in its beauty, as one instance of the eternal self, the emptying of God into creation. To see the exquisite tree as an expression of God, revealing herself, her beauty, her goodness, her truth in creation. And when you behold the tree in this way, you move beyond its mere relative truth as either a beech or an elm, as a big or a small tree, a useful or a useless tree, a healthy or a dying tree, your tree or not your tree, a hardwood or a softwood, etc., etc., etc. Now you are allowing the tree to reveal its inherent dignity. Just as it is, we have the sycamore tree that had planted herself in the parking lot. She has no earth around her, just asphalt. And yet she's expressing her golden beauty today as she reaches toward the heavens. You talk about integrity. You talk about the will to live. Feel the inherent dignity just as it is, without your interference by judging it or your labels. It just becomes an epiphany for you, and the walls of your world begin to expand. It becomes an epiphany for you. Huh. And then we become intimate with the ultimate. And so we're practicing this act of beholding in this holy instant, being held by this presence, by this love. And we open to a felt awareness around that. My Sufi teacher said, if you only knew how much you are loved. And in that holy instant, I felt the love of the universe just embracing me like I'd never felt it before. Now, it wasn't just that moment where the love was holding. It's always been holding us. And so we come into this holy instant to remember, to trust, to allow. And ask, what if? What if we are an inlet and an outlet for the passageway of divine love? What if we are the way, peace on earth and goodwill toward all manifests on earth? What if we are all a part of the dance of life, in a web of life, and everything is interconnected? What if life is not a problem to be solved, but is a beautiful love affair to be engaged in? What if we're not here to be perfect, but we're here to embrace all of our human flaws and the suffering of the planet? What if nobody has an answer for you and you're going to live in the question for the rest of your life? What if we could actually stop long enough to be here now, in the eternal now? What if we take that flower from the kingdom of heaven within and we let it flower within our life, within the body of our experience? What then? What then? And so we come here this Sunday to live in the question and to say, yes, this life belongs to you. and I offer it so humbly, like the tree offers her life to this planet, rooted in truth, reaching toward the light, and giving, always giving and receiving in like manner to this incredible experience that we all share. I invite you to place your hand on your heart, the cave wherein God lies, and say to this beautiful holding space for divine love, I honor you.
I honor you.
I respect you.
I respect you.
I love you.
I love you.
You are the holding space of God's love.
You are the holding space of God's love.
Flowering within our being.
Radiating out to the world.
Reflecting the love that's everywhere present.
Reflecting the love that's everywhere present.
In the dance of the one.
In the dance of the one.
That joyfully expresses.
That joyfully expresses.
And reveals the imprisoned splendor.
And reveals the imprisoned splendor.
As the good.
As the true.
The true.
And the beautiful.
All at once revealed.
All at once revealed.
In diversity and multiplicity.
In diversity and multiplicity.
Oh, what a beautiful expression.
Oh, what a beautiful expression.
Open your eyes, open your hands. Tick, tick, boom. You have arrived. You are expressions of that. Allow it and enjoy the journey. Happy Thanksgiving. Thanks for sending in your tithes. And we'll see you next week.
Listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.